John Rosengren is kind enough to join us. He's the award-winning journalist and author. He's recently nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, has won more than a dozen writing awards. His articles have appeared in The Atlantic, The New York Magazine, Reader's Digest, Sports Illustrated, The Utney Reader, of course, as well. He's a well-known author of a lot of great sports books, Blades of Glory, as well as also Hammering Hank George Almighty in the Say Hey Kid, Hank Greenberg, A Hero of Heroes. And his latest novel is A Clean Heart, a novel by John Rosengren. He's kind enough to join us today to talk about that novel, as well as also a live event coming up here with Next Chapter Books. John, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Well, good afternoon, Matt. Nice to see you.
It's nice to be with you, my friend. I'm actually quite honored. You're a wonderful writer, sir. I don't get to talk to too many really well-known, recognized authors, and you've had a great career of writing. Especially, I've really enjoyed some of your sports books here.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate it. Like Mark Twain said, when he receives a compliment, he always feels embarrassed because he feels like people haven't said enough. No, I'm just kidding. You're very generous to say that.
I was going to go with the Bette Midler line, which is this: enough about me talking about myself. You talk about me now.
Right. Well, I think you're wonderful too, Matt. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Let's talk a little bit, first of all, about the book A Clean Heart. This is, it's interesting. You talk about how in your youth you overcame alcoholism. You've been sober ever since for a long time. You wrote some of your earlier books were directly addressing this. Life is Just a Party, A Portrait of a Teenage Partier, and the big book Unplugged, A Young Person's Guide to Alcoholics Anonymous. But then you moved into sports books. Why, talk a little bit about the decision to when you talk about A Clean Heart, going back and talking about addiction specifically in the many forms, as well as dealing with a recovery center, a home there, dealing with kids that have issues.
Well, I was lucky. When I was 17, I went through treatment for my own alcoholism and drug addiction. And I had a teacher in high school, my journalism teacher, Roger Mann at Wayzata High School, helped spark the dream to become a writer. And as a result of that, I wrote this loosely autobiographical first book, a collection of short stories called Life is Just a Party that you mentioned. And I went on to write some other books and, continue to live this dream. But I love writing fiction. And so after working in an adolescent treatment center out in Nampa, Idaho, which is just next door to Boise, Idaho, where I lived, I got the idea for this novel, and this is even a little more loosely autobiographical, about a young man working in this adolescent treatment center run by a nun, a hard-drinking nun with an MBA, and he has to confront the craziness of the unit, as well as his mother, who's also dying of alcoholism. And I like writing nonfiction because I get to tell stories of what's actually happened, and I like writing fiction because I get to make stuff up. And there are challenges and rewards of both, but addiction and recovery is obviously close to my heart, and so it's something, it's subject territory I know well, having lived it. And so I welcome the chance to kind of plumb those depths.
I find it's and one of the things which I imagine was a source of a lot of material for you is the dancing on the edge. It's the, here you are a recovering alcoholic, and then you go on out there and you're trying to help others. But as your book sort of says, it's, and this is a piece of fiction. Once again, it's a novel, but at the same time, you're dealing with people who make being sober difficult at times. It's the challenge of that. And I mean, and obviously, I'd love to hear from your as much as you can talk about your personal experiences, but also the approach in writing this, because I mean, obviously, that's something that I think that a lot of people who are recovering addicts, that's something they want to try to avoid. It's not like the old Cheers episodes where Ted Danson played an alcoholic bartender, recovering alcoholic who owned a bar. I mean, people are like, why would you want to do that? I mean, talk a little bit about that from your own perspective and how it helped you in writing here, because it would seem like it would be a very difficult element to get past.
Well, you're right. You can't wish sobriety upon anyone. They have to come to it themselves and have to want it. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about receiving the gift of desperation, and someone has to hit their bottom before they're really willing to accept help. But the paradox, too, of Alcoholics Anonymous is being able to, or one stays sober by helping others. And so the idea is you can't keep it unless you give it away. And so to be able to, it can be extremely frustrating to work with other people who maybe aren't quite ready or who relapse. At the same time, it's terribly gratifying to see someone grasp the program and latch on to that gift of sobriety and start living out the principles in their lives and even helping other people. And there's a tremendous ripple effect. Just as with an alcoholic, you know, they leave a lot of damage in their wake. Well, the mm-hmm. recovering alcoholic and addict also leaves a lot of goodness in, or you know, the affects a lot of goodness in their lives, and so that extends beyond themselves. And I find it necessary and helpful to be around others who are engaged in the same struggle I am, because it's not something that just goes away. Even though I quit drinking and smoking marijuana, they used to call us baby dope fiends back when I was 17. You know, and I'm 56 now. It's still an ongoing struggle to just live well, and so it helps to have others who are on that journey around me, wherever they are in the process.
Well, and I know, you know, myself, I was never, you know, put in jail or, you know, recommended for a 12-step program. But I'm just out of my own health. I basically said, you know what, I'm done drinking, and I walked away from it. And that I've noticed that, and there are just times where all of a sudden it's like, wow, beer would be good, and you're like, I haven't had a beer in you know, it's 7-8 years. I mean, why would I want one now? You know, you have that constant struggle, and it's I think one of the hardest things for me to think about when I stopped drinking myself. Was I stopped when I was later in life. I mean, it had to be for yourself a very ominous and large, maybe ungraspable task when you started saying, I'm going to be sober at 17, because you have your entire life ahead of you. It, there must be an element, and you talk about this in the book with the kids that are in the novel, that you're dealing with people that have to look at it. Your life has really just begun. You're going to be sober for a long time, and whereas that's a good thing and that's achievable, obviously, by yourself, it's also got to be an incredibly intimidating step for someone so young to realize, I need to stop this or else I'm going to be dead before I'm in my 20s.
Right. Well, I remember them hearing, and I think Carter tells this to the kids he works with in the novel, that addiction ends in three possible scenarios: death, insanity, or jail. And yet there is a fourth case scenario, too, and that's recovery. Mm-hmm. And that's the one he's trying to show others, and I was fortunate to arrive at myself. So one can't, I think, look, or it's overwhelming if one thinks, oh, God, I got to do this for the rest of my life. But if one, you know, that's why we say one day at a time. It's like, mm-hmm. all I have to do is today, just the next 24 hours, and that makes it much more manageable.
When you're writing a book of this nature, and obviously you've had experience of the characters in the novel, how, you know, is it difficult? I mean, when you say, do I really want to put someone I know personally, and I'm not going to talk about any specifics, but you're dealing with people that are going through a very
tough. It's not about my mom. She wants you to know that. Really, it's not. But, that's not her.
But okay, mom aside, when you're dealing with teens, and you yourself have had this experience and dealing with treatment centers, you know, how hard is it to write something individual enough to where, you know, you're not talking about, you know, obviously you can be inspired by a story, but you know you might not want to necessarily convey that over to a novel. You understand? I mean, I just, you know, is it hard to convey that without all of a sudden saying, well, I'm writing too much that this person could identify who I'm talking about?
Right, absolutely. There are a couple of characters who are very closely drawn to their inspirations. And then there are others who are quite, you know, just were really fun to make up, that I just kind of started with a loose idea of who they were, and then they, you know, as I started writing about them, kept writing about them, got to know them better, they just evolved, and they were really fun to create. And so I think the one can't be handicapped by thinking, oh, no, so-and-so will recognize herself, or, you know, my brother's going to beat me up if I write this. And so, you know, I think the writer just has to take over and let it come out, and then later read through it and say, okay, cut that or leave that in.
Well, your mom obviously had some issues. she kind of cracked you a little bit on that one. You know, that's also trouble. I know people who are writers that sometimes they'll say no, truly. I mean, even though there's a mother in here, it's not you. And that mm-hmm. sometimes I imagine it gets trips you up as well.
Right, and I can't deal with my mother issues on live radio, but I will tell you that there was a woman at the treatment center I worked at who was about 12 years older, who became a very close friend and then a fantasy, and she was the inspiration for Natalie in the book.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask
maybe that's my Oedipal complex playing out. I don't know.
Sister Mary Xavier, a hard-drinking nun, as it's described. You talk about that character. How familiar is that character in your real life, or is that one that you just basically built on its own?
You know, she was one that probably sprung out of my youth attending Catholic grade school, because mm-hmm. I was schooled by the Sisters of Saint the yeah School Sisters of Notre Dame, but I did not know a Sister Mary Xavier. She was one that I just started playing with and getting to know as I wrote, and then. She just had these, you know, she was so hardcore and hard driving and wanted to make money and didn't really understand chemical dependency, and that lent itself to some comic issues. And I just, and presented, you know, all sorts of problems for the good folks trying to, the therapist trying to help the kids get sober. So I just had fun with her as I got to know her. And then I also, she's in some ways a very sad character. And so I felt compassion for her as well, and she just evolved and became this person, you know, that I got to know, I guess.
The book, I one of the things I find it's important to write, I think, about recovery, recovering from addiction. And it gives people hope. It gives people presence there. But I will make a point, I think, that it makes me a little bit frustrated when I see writing out there, because it almost seems like if you're going to write about someone who is recovering, that you have to treat it as if it can't just be a character who I don't drink. You know what I mean? It's just it's kind of one of those. You know, there are some characters. I know the in the Stephen King book, Dr. Sleep. There's a recovery element that's going on in there, and there are people who are recovered. But there always seems to be this mentality that if you're dealing with a character that has to deal with recovery and addiction and stuff, that it's hard to not write that character in just a regular environment. And I think that this is not something. I think it's our culture as we have it here. I think that when I look at football games and I still see, you know, all the ads for booze, and, you know, you go up on YouTube and half the ads are for booze. It's this mentality of either you're drinking, or the mentality is, oh, well, you were broken and you needed to fix yourself. It doesn't just seem like it, I think that that's a crime to a point for the way that people are written. Do you think what do you think about that thought process? Because I don't know if necessarily there are enough people that write characters where they are, the alcoholism is there, but it's not the driving force. I think there are people always kind of get lost in that. You know what I mean?
Well, I said my novel in a treatment center. And so obviously, themes of addiction recovery are central mm-hmm. to it in the workplace, and as well as in the lives of these characters. And, it, you know, once one descends into the depths of addiction, it is a central feature of their life and does tend to dominate their thoughts and actions. And on the flip side, recovery can do that as well. Once one is trying to recover from the addiction, you know, that often needs to be in the forefront of a person's mind to stay in recovery. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, having lived that for many years, that's been, that was something I wanted to explore in the book. And the paradox of recovery, which I think is surrender. And that's something that Carter in the novel is trying to get across to the various characters he encounters, is that one can't control it, that once one surrenders, that's when one finds one's strength. And so it's, you know, admitting one's powerlessness is how one gains power.
Weakness, as long as you have the weakness there, there's always the temptation.
Yeah, although for most addicts and alcoholics, they're relieved of the craving, and then it's more just the challenge of how to live life well on a daily basis, you know, not let their defects of character dominate them.
I'm presuming you've done a lot of these Zoom, groups like Next Chapter Books. I want to make sure I mention they have a Zoom event tomorrow night. It's 7:00. You can go register at Next Chapter Books. They have a link there where you can sign up for this. Have you been doing these around the country quite a bit?
Well, I've done several of them, and they're actually more fun than I expected. And so I'm really looking forward to tomorrow night as well here in St. Paul, just across the river.
Well, all my best on this. I think it's very very enjoyable. Writer is the fact that you're so eclectic, and you've got your great sports books. But getting back into this, do you feel as if your next books you're going to kind of stay into this category and explore more on these novels?
Well, I have another novel I'm working on. It's not necessarily related to addiction, and then I have a couple other book ideas as well that are nonfiction, not necessarily addiction either. And so it's just, for me, I tend to be curious about a lot of subjects. And so I've written about a variety of things just because I want to learn more about them. And so I explore them, whether that's baseball or gambling or right now I'm writing about, or I've written about the Ku Klux Klan recently, which seems very relevant to race relations. So it just goes on and on.
I look forward to your next books. A Clean Heart, novel by John Rosengren. Once again, you can find that over at Next Chapter Books. And reminder, the Zoom event is tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. John, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me on, Matt. I really appreciate your interest.
I appreciate the time. I really do. John Rosengren, kind enough to take some time with us today. Let's take a break. We'll come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.